All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, is it? It is Thursday. How about that? Today's Thursday, November 6, 2025. And our top story this morning is CarMax abruptly fired their CEO. Do we have another cockroach in the making? You cockroach, la cucaracha. CEO Bill Nash, he's out of there, unannounced, unscheduled. That's never a good sign. CarMax stock is tanking this morning. It looks like board member David McCreet is going to take over as interim CEO. Again, not good news when they fire the CEO and they don't have a replacement already waiting in the wings. That means something bad happened over there. They also released preliminary results, and we know what the bad is. Way below estimates for their quarterly earnings. Again, preliminary results. This is their way of saying, guys, the earnings are going to suck. Also going on, what do we got? Unit sales down 8 to 12% year over year. Yikes. The auto market is in big trouble here. We've seen a lot of this, right? The frauds are the first to fail. Tricolor, First Brands. And then we had, you know, the struggling, maybe the more aggressive companies fail after that. They're not outright frauds, but your Primal End, your First Help, they're having trouble over there. Now we've got CarMax. Big problems here. The whole auto sector is in big trouble. We've seen the car makers are in trouble. Companies like Nissan, the car retailers, the subprime retailers, the financiers. And I can't help but think of that one name, and I know you're all thinking it. I know it's all in the back of your minds. I'm going to say it again. Carvana. Ernie Garcia, Carvana CEO. That sound you hear, that's Lox Ganapathy from Utica's Research sneaking up behind you with a spreadsheet full of ABS data 15 miles long saying, Ernie, explain this shit. Carvana is the one. They're reporting blowout earnings over and over again. Oh, our business is great. You think maybe it's got something to do with the fact that they hide all their losses on the balance sheet of Drive Time, which is run by the CEO's father? You think maybe that might have something to do with it? Sooner or later, that one is going to hit the fan. Big trouble in the auto space this morning. Also going on this morning, we have got labor data coming out. More data, and it's not good. October job cuts were somewhere between 153 and 154,000 layoffs were announced in the month of October. That is the most for any October dating back to 2003. It's kind of an obscure statistic. We have had individual months of higher layoffs like January's and February's. You tend to get a lot of layoffs after Christmas. But October, not really a month known for layoffs. Most companies are going into seasonal hiring mode in October. Instead, they're announcing layoffs. So not a good sign for Christmas season. The seasonal hiring's probably not going to be that great. We've got data from both Challenger Gray and Christmas, along with my friends over at Macro Edge and their job cuts tracker. Both are in agreement. We had record job cuts announced in the month of October. And, you know, this is great because as all this is happening, the government is still shut down. So we have no hard data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics to say otherwise. You know, we're basically flying blind here. I would imagine when the non-farm payrolls does come back, it's going to be like that scene in the horror movie where the girl turns on the light in the bathroom and the killer's standing right behind her. That's going to be the unemployment sneaking up behind us. But we won't know until we actually turn the light on, until the government shutdown ends. So for now, it's a strong labor market until the data proves otherwise, I guess, or that's the way they're going to carry on. We've also got an article in Bloomberg this morning calling it a Jenga tower economy. That's interesting. The guy who patented the phrase K-shaped economy to describe a few of us doing really well, everybody else in the shitter, he is out calling it a Jenga tower, how 10% of consumers, the wealthy, are basically propping up the entire economy as everybody else is struggling. Oh, that's going to end really well. Meanwhile, we've got developments at the Supreme Court yesterday. It is not looking good for President Trump's tariffs in the Supreme Court. Just based on the questions that were asked and the language being used by justices, namely conservative justices, yesterday, it's not looking good here. Some of the betting websites are actually giving it a very high probability that the Supreme Court overturns tariffs, and that would just make an even bigger mess, because then what happens to the people who have already paid these tens of billions of dollars in tariffs? Do they get their money back? How does that work? The mechanics of that? Yikes. That could be interesting. We don't know when the court is going to rule, but the arguments were pretty profound yesterday. Also, this story, OpenAI lost $12 billion last quarter. Whoa. Put that in perspective. In all of last year, OpenAI lost $3.7 billion for the whole freaking year. OpenAI has recently told us that they've reached an annual revenue run rate of $13 billion a year, which means if you take their best month and you multiply it by 12, they would make $13 billion in a year. That's revenue they collect. But they lost $12 billion. WTF. This story is actually a few days old. I don't know how the hell I missed this, but oh my God, this is a cash furnace. No wonder they're going to the government for a bailout. See that video I did last night about OpenAI CFO saying she wants a loan guarantee from the federal government to leave taxpayers holding the bag for their BS. Oh, she's out this morning saying, I misspoke. Yeah, you mean you're doing damage control? Good God, this bubble, it cannot pop soon enough. And speaking of the AI bubble, Snapchat stock is ripping this morning. You might be saying, what, Snapchat? Why is that one up? Well, the earnings were just kind of meh, but they announced a deal. Perplexity AI is going to pay them $400 million to put their search engine, their AI search engine, in Snapchat's app. Now, keep in mind, Perplexity is not selling it. Perplexity is paying them to take it. And then anybody who uses it, remember, the AI companies aren't profitable, so Perplexity is going to be losing money every time somebody does a search on their search engine within Snapchat's app. So Perplexity is paying $400 million for the opportunity to lose even more money. You know, don't you just love how this bubble operates? Snapchat is ripping on the news. Oh my God, get your kids the hell off of Snapchat if they're not already. That's all I can tell you. We've also got Qualcomm earnings. They beat, but the stock is down because they're losing market share in Samsung phones. Peloton has recalled 833,000 bikes on a safety issue. Pretty much every bike they've ever made and sold, Peloton is now recalled. So guys, look, if you have a Peloton bike, you better hurry up and contact the company before that dirty towel that you hung on it 6 months ago ends up getting injured. Also, we've got DoorDash earnings. Big miss for DoorDash earnings. Their revenue beat expectations, but they're spending way too much on CapEx and advertising. That company is taking a dive this morning. And we got a couple of trade war updates. China is buying a token amount of United States wheat. A crazy headline over at Nexperia this morning. That's kind of interesting. It makes sense, but yikes. And then we've got the LME has just suspended trading in non-US dollar denominated metal options. So we've got some overtures from the Chinese. We've got this weird thing from the Dutch and the Chinese. And then we've got the LME seems to be throwing another punch in the trade war. Not sure what to make of these articles in aggregate, but that's always one to watch. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button right next to it. You're new, guys. Subscribe to the channel. Come on back tomorrow. We do this every day so you can have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets. And right now, the S&P 500, oh, look at that. We've started taking a dive here. And you know what? This was right around, no, it wasn't right around the announcement. The CarMax announcement was a few hours ago. I'm not sure what hit at 8:30 to 8:35, but the stock market started heading lower right around that point. Now we're down 4 points or 0.06%. Not a big decline, just kind of flat here, but we were up. That's interesting. Let's see what the Dow's doing. Same shape for the Dow, off 29 points, 0.06%, all in just the last 20 minutes or so. And the NASDAQ is down 30 points, 0.11% lower. It's got to be the mix of all these earnings. We got a lot of earnings today, and most of the names that reported are down big, unless we've had some big story hit in the last 5 minutes that I didn't catch. Mish, if I'm missing something big, put it in my text messages, brother, and we'll find it. But for now, the number go down. That's interesting. The dollar's a little bit weaker here, off by 33 basis points, 99.85. A little bit weaker here. That's going to put some upward pressure on asset prices. We've got bonds are a little bit higher here, sending their yields a little bit lower. The 30-year Treasury, 4.698. That's off by almost 4 basis points. The 10-year, 4.111, off by almost 5 basis points. The 2 years at 3.578, off by 5 points and change. And the 1 month is down a fraction of a point at 3.911. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got the metals are looking good again here this morning. Spot gold back over $4,000 at $4,006, $27.41 higher, or about 0.7% to the upside. We've got December gold futures are at $4,015. That's higher by about $22 also. Spot silver is up by 42 cents at $48.44. That's the London price. It's higher by 0.9% this morning. And the New York price is higher as well, $48.30. For December silver futures, that's up by 27 cents or 0.57%. I like the shiny. Copper is pretty much unchanged here this morning. Platinum is down by about 0.2%. Palladium's down a little bit more, 1.9% lower for palladium. And crude oil is just a tick higher, up by 12 cents or 0.2%, $59.70 for December WTI crude. Bitcoin had a better day yesterday, but we're selling back to the selling just a little bit here this morning, 102,947. Over the weekend, we went as low as 98,000 and change, caught a nice bounce yesterday. Now we're sitting at about just below 103 here. Again, guys, it is early on in winter, and I suspect it's going to keep getting colder. All right, now let's talk about this one. It hit this morning. And you know, I as soon as I saw this one, Mission, I talked about it. We got the show posted, and I sent a text message over to Lakshya Ganapathy. Hey, did you see this? Of course, she had it hours ago. She is so on her game over at Unicus Research when it comes to the auto space. But here is the story. CarMax stock tumbles after CEO exit and weak preliminary results. CarMax stock fell 11% Thursday morning after the company announced the termination of its CEO and issued preliminary third quarter earnings that fell significantly short of analyst expectations. The nation's largest used car retailer said it expects earnings per share of 18 cents to 36 cents for the third quarter. That is well below the 69 cents consensus estimate. They're going to miss, and they are going to miss big. The company also reported that comparable store unit sales are expected to decrease by 8 to 12% for the quarter ended November 30th. Whoa, Tricolor took a big chunk out of CarMax. This is the K-shaped economy, guys. When 90% of people can't afford to shop, you can't expect an industry like the auto industry, especially the used car auto industry, to be able to keep up with that. CarMax reporting, just preliminarily reporting some really bad numbers here. The CEO, CarMax announced that CEO Bill Nash is stepping down from his position and board membership effective December 1st. Board member David McCreet has been named interim president and CEO, while former CEO Tom Folliard will serve as interim executive chairman of the board. CarMax released a big statement about blah, 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 our brand, transparent, personalized. Yeah, we love you. And then they say, however, our recent results do not reflect that potential and change is needed. The company cited several factors impacting its third quarter performance, including declining retail unit sales, sharp depreciation in its wholesale business, and increased marketing spend to support its new brand positioning launch. Yikes. This was a bludgeoning for CarMax. And look at the stock here, down 12.4% ahead of the open, off by more than $5, $35.78. We'll see where this one goes. It's slightly off the lows. It went as low as $33 this morning, but not looking so good for this one. And again, I can't help but think Carvana. Guys, if CarMax is doing bad, Carvana's got to be even worse. All right, let's talk about what's going on here now with the layoffs and the job cuts. This one in Bloomberg, U.S. has most October layoffs in over 20 years on AI and cost cuts. And they keep saying AI, guys. I really think this AI is just a cover story for laying people off and replacing them with H-1B visas. Everybody says they're cutting people and so that they can double down on AI, but then the articles all say the companies are losing money that are using AI and it's wasting time, not increasing productivity. So I just don't buy that AI is causing these layoffs. Let's see. Mish said, Pelosi will not seek re-election and Trump change tariffs on China in line with agreement and possibly wide markets heading lower. Okay, thank you, Mish, for the update. Appreciate that. Nothing that really explains a sudden drop in stocks, so I'm going to stick with the earnings stories this morning. U.S. companies announced the most job cuts for any October in more than two decades as AI reshapes industries and cost-cutting accelerates, according to data from outplacement firm Challenger Gray & Christmas. Companies last month announced 153,074 job cuts, nearly triple the number during the same month last year, and driven by the technology and warehousing sectors. It's the most for any October since 2003, when the advent of cell phones was similarly disruptive, said Andy Challenger, the company's CEO. All right, so we got tech and warehousing. The tech layoffs, all right, they're saying it's AI. In my opinion, they're laying people off in order to free up payroll cash so that they can burn it buying more GPUs to keep this bubble inflated. I don't think they're actually replacing people with AI. And then the warehousing sector. Check out an interview that Craig Fuller did over at Coffee and a Mic yesterday. By the way, shout out to Coffee and a Mic. I think his channel and his podcast is awesome, mostly because he has me on all the time. But I digress. But Craig Fuller, some spooky stuff happening in the logistics sector, big slowdowns in trucking. So I'm not surprised to see the warehousing sectors also slowing down as well here. Now let's scroll down a little bit here. It's possible with rate cuts and a strong showing in November that companies may make a late season push for employees. So it's not too late. But at this point, we do not expect a strong seasonal hiring environment in 2025, said Challenger. And then here you can see the Challenger job cuts. Again, October, not as high as we saw in March or February. So it's not like this is the highest month in 20 years, but this is the highest count for October in 20 years, 22 years. So, you know, it's kind of an obscure data point, but this is happening at a time when the labor market is supposedly strong. It ain't. And it's not just Challenger, by the way. Shout out to my friends at MacroEdge because they have their job cuts tracking tool. And I tell you, I really like this tool because this is an ongoing monthly tally. They don't just give a report at the end of every month and you get one data point and you get to drink from the fire hose. They actually track this in real time. So, and I would also note 154,600. That is almost exactly in line with what Challenger just reported. So shout out to my friends at MacroEdge.net. Their job cuts tracker also showing one of the worst Octobers in decades. And we've got this one in Bloomberg using some pretty strong language here. Jenga Tower U.S. economy teeters as middle class pulls back spending. It's the best economy ever. Can't you tell from the headline? The surprising resilience of the U.S. economy this year is masking underlying weakness among low and middle income households as higher income Americans continue to drive growth, said Bloomberg, echoing what Jack has been saying since 2022. This dichotomy between the haves and have-nots isn't new, but the economic strain is now bleeding from the lowest earners to the middle class, creating an even starker divide that some economists say makes the economy more susceptible to a downturn. The richest 10% of households are fueling nearly half of total U.S. spending, thanks to a stock market surge that has boosted wealth and in turn propelled economic output this year. Meanwhile, lower-income families are pulling back in the face of tight budgets, still high living costs, and a raft of corporate layoffs. Executives at companies like Chipotle, Hilton, and Ethan Allen have cited the trend in recent earnings calls, and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said officials are carefully watching signs of a bifurcated economy that they created after the central bank lowered interest rates last week. I feel like our economy today resembles a top-heavy Jenga tower, said Peter Atwater, the economist who in 2020 popularized the idea of a K-shaped economy where the well-off are on an upward track and the less fortunate experience further declines. And if you really want a little help understanding the K-shaped economy, there's a lot of different versions of these charts showing the K-shaped economy. But Jim Bianco from Bianco Research put this one out today. And this kind of shows, right, you can kind of see how it's the shape of a K here. We're showing in blue. This is Michigan consumer sentiment, the attitude of shoppers if you poll people. And then in red, you've got the S&P 500, the stock market. And you can see starting in the, March of 2020, right with the vid, right when the Fed printed all that money and created this CF, we saw consumer sentiment start to head lower and it kept heading lower, even as stocks continued to head higher and higher. And that is your bifurcated, your top heavy Jenga tower economy, your K-shaped economy. Everybody is doing poorly except 10% of people who own everything. They're doing great. And then we wonder why a freaking socialist is suddenly the mayor of the financial capital of the world. Gee, you think these two might be related? Wall Street, you better get your act together. You better stop treating people like cattle or the socialists take over, which does not historically go very well for people like you. I'm just going to throw that out there. All right. And we've also got the Supreme Court yesterday. This was crazy news. And you could see, man, Walmart shares were loving this yesterday on news that the tariffs may end up getting struck down by the court. We don't know that, but just based on the tone of the justices, it's not looking good here. Supreme Court skepticism on Trump tariffs means uncertainty reigns. Market loves that uncertainty. President Donald Trump's use of broad powers to impose his signature tariffs faced a barrage of skeptical questions at the Supreme Court on Wednesday that signal it may be ready to intervene. Businesses and countries suffering from the duties and looking for resolution, though, are set for months of uncertainty. Whether or not the high court rules Trump wrongly imposed tariffs on dozens of nations by invoking the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the reality is that the president loves tariffs. And trade lawyers and experts say there are plenty of other laws he can draw on to fill the gap if needed, even if none offers the immediacy that Trump relishes. That means uncertainty will hang over big geopolitical negotiations with China, the European Union, and other trading partners, and the day-to-day conduct of business for thousands of companies paying the duties or trying to find ways around them. Betting markets late Wednesday showed declining odds that Trump will prevail, and shares of large U.S. retail brands rallied on hopes for relief from the import taxes he imposed this year. The Trump administration put on a brave face after Wednesday's 2.5-hour arguments, which featured skeptical questions by key conservative judges in the government's case. Guys, I don't know what to really make of this. All I can tell you is this will make one hell of a mess if the Supreme Court strikes it down. And let's be honest, guys, this is some pretty drastic action when it comes to executive overreach. This is a pretty big one. All right. And if you're one of the people who's on the fence on this, I just want you to imagine the people you didn't vote for are doing this. Imagine President Harris, gag me, but imagine President Harris doing this. Would you feel the same way about it? And I ask myself this question all the time, and the answer is certainly no. If President Harris was doing the same thing, I would probably be highly critical of it. And yes, that does make me something of a hypocrite, doesn't it? And yet there it is. This was a very big Supreme Court overreach. And this is an important question we have to have, because if we give this guy the power, the next guy or gal will almost certainly use it. And then this story, OMG, I can't believe this story. How did I miss this one? It's a few days old. OpenAI made a $12 billion loss last quarter, Microsoft results indicate. Holy crap, no wonder they want a bailout. We knew they lost money, but $12 billion in a quarter? That is like quadruple what they lost all year last year, but in one quarter. And we lose money on every prompt, but we're making up for it in volume. That's what this is telling you. Inside Microsoft's earnings was a change that caught analysts by surprise, a $4.1 billion hit on its investment in OpenAI. The figure was up 490% from a year earlier and implies a more than $12 billion quarterly loss at OpenAI, said Firoz Valigi, an analyst at Bernstein, based on the 32.5% stake Microsoft reported owning in OpenAI's last quarter. That's because Microsoft handles its OpenAI stake using an accounting approach known as equity method, in which it simply reports its share of losses or income at the AI company. OpenAI recently restructured to become a for-profit entity, and Microsoft will have a 27.5% stake going forward. A $12 billion loss in 3 months would mark one of the largest single-quarter losses for a tech company in history. It is not far off from the $13 billion in revenue that OpenAI has told investors it's on track to take in over the course of the whole year. Oh my God. This is the worst company in freaking history, guys. It's the best thing in the world. Oh my God, it's going to do all these amazing things. This whole paragraph is just a total damning condemnation of this whole bubble. The biggest loss of any tech company in history, more than their entire revenue for the year. You've got to be kidding me. Now, think about that and then go watch this video that I put out yesterday. And then it makes total sense why CEO Sarah Friar is at this big gaggle of AI enthusiasts in California talking about how she wants the government to bail out her company or a bailout in advance. She wants loan guarantees so OpenAI can borrow the $1.4 trillion that they don't have, that they've promised to spend. Good God, this company is a freaking disaster. And by the way, she's sitting there talking about how she wants this bailout. She gave this elaborate diatribe on all the benefits, about how it will lower her borrowing costs, about how it'll allow her to take out a bigger loan-to-value ratio borrowing. Oh, we can borrow even more money if the government backstops it. She gave this whole speech about it. It was not at all unclear. Go watch this video, and you tell me if I'm misinterpreting what she's saying, because this morning we get this one in Unusual Whales. OpenAI wants federal taxpayer backstop for new investments per Bloomberg. But CFO, that's Sarah Friar, the same girl from the video, she has clarified that this was a misspeak. No, guys, a misspeak is when you mean to say increase, but you accidentally say decrease because whatever, the wires got crossed in your brain. I do that sometimes. Sometimes I say rate cut instead of rate hike. That's a misspeak. An entire freaking speech about how you want this backstop, this bailout from the government, and then all the detailed bulleted points and the reasons why you want it. You don't accidentally blurt that out. This is damage control. Sarah Friar set people into panic last night when she said this, saying we want the government to bail it out. And you got the whole market is saying, we know it's a bubble now and it's going to burst any second. And then she's asking for a bailout. Yeah, she's realizing, oh my God, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, sorry, everybody, I misspoke. Bullshit. Good God, what a mess. And in totally unrelated AI news, Snapchat surge on $400 million Perplexity AI deal. And no, this is not AI making money. This is AI paying money for the opportunity to lose even more money. That's what this deal is. I just love this story. Snapshare surged in pre-market trading after the company announced a $400 million partnership with Perplexity AI to incorporate its AI-powered search engine into Snapchat. The deal gives Snap a new business line and puts the social messaging company more squarely in the mix around AI chatbots and assistants. Perplexity's answer engine will be integrated into Snapchat's interface beginning in 2026, according to Snap CEO Evan Spiegel, though the company's existing My AI chatbot will also be available to users. We certainly see a lot of opportunity to open up Snapchat to more AI partners over time, Spiegel said in an interview. Perplexity will pay Snap a combination of cash and equity. Revenue from the partnership is expected to start contributing to results next year, Snap said in a statement. Perplexity has more than 20 million active users, but the company has also been sued by multiple other tech companies, including Amazon and Reddit, over allegations that it has violated their respective terms of service. I want to send a shout out to, was it the Crypto Observer? I think it's the Crypto Observer on X who sent me this yesterday. Perplexity is basically just OpenAI or Anthropic. That's all they do is they take OpenAI or Anthropic's chatbot, they put it in their search engine, and they buy bulk answers from OpenAI, which, by the way, is total opportunity for fraud from both companies. They buy AI use in bulk, and then they send it piecemeal. They lose money on it. Now they're giving Snapchat $400 million to be able to do this within their app. Oh, my God. This is such a disaster. The partnership announcement was made alongside Snap's third quarter earnings, which were largely in line with analyst estimates. Now, look, Snap is doing great here because Snap is making the $400 million. Their stock is up 16.25% here. I mean, Snap has been bleeding money. The app has been dying. But now you've got an AI company. It's like, here's $400 million to put my garbage in your app. Sure, I'll take it. But remember, Perplexity, that's a private company. They have no stock. But they do have an endless supply of investors giving them money to burn. And this is how they're burning it, by giving it to Snapchat. As long as the investors keep handing money over, this kind of crap can continue, I guess. Meanwhile, Qualcomm forecasts a solid quarter, but smaller Samsung business hits shares. This is interesting. More earnings today, not going over so well. Chip designer Qualcomm on Wednesday forecast quarterly sales and profit above market expectations as premium smartphone sales rebounded, but a possible loss of business next year from Samsung, a key customer, sent its shares down in after hours. Qualcomm is among the biggest suppliers of modern chips that connect smartphones to wireless data networks. They did post a pretty good beat. The numbers were good, but for Samsung Electronics' most recent Galaxy S25 models, Qualcomm supplied 100% of the modern chips. But Qualcomm CEO Cristiano Amon told Reuters on Wednesday that Qualcomm was prepared for a lower share of Samsung's next generation. When you think about Galaxy S26, we're planning for 75%. That's what we expect. So they're losing market share in the guts of the Samsung phones. Qualcomm shares fell 2.7% in extended trading. Let's take a look here. They're now down 1.5%, doing a little bit better here after the opening bell has rung. Year to date, though, Samsung up about 17% still year to date. So it's been a pretty good year for this one. Peloton recalls 833,000 more bikes over seat post issue. Two injuries reported. This is the same problem that they had to recall millions of bikes a few years ago. The seat posts were breaking and people were getting hurt. Apparently it's happening now. This is like every bike Peloton has ever made. I poke fun at this company all the time. It's a glorified, expensive exercise bike with an iPad essentially duct taped to it. That's all their business is. And then they try to sell subscriptions of people wooing into your ears while you pedal your bike and like, oh, okay, we've got this image of a mountain scene scrolling past you as you pedal inside on the stationary bike. You could always get on a real bike and go outside and see real scenery moving past you for a whole hell of a lot less money, but I digress. But the reason I'm talking about this is look at Peloton stock. Look at the chart of this. This is just like a perfect capture of how stupid this whole economy has been since COVID. I mean, look at what this did. Kathy Wood is up here like, oh, Peloton is a disrupting company. I'm my ARK ETF. I'm going to buy this at $130, $140 a share. Now it's down, what, 94% since then? And, you know, it's lost another 0.5% this morning just because at some point you can only lose so much money and people stop caring. $6.91 off by another 3% for Peloton this morning. DoorDash also not doing so well here. The stock sinks 9% as company misses earnings and says it expects further spending. Good revenue, but they forgot to make money. That's a problem. DoorDash reported third quarter earnings that missed analyst expectations and said it expects to spend several hundred million dollars on new initiatives and developments in 2026. Earnings were 55 cents per share versus 69 cents expected. So that's a pretty big miss. Revenue was a slight beat at $3.45 billion versus $3.36 billion expected. We wish there was a way to grow a baby into an adult without investment or to see that baby grow into an adult overnight, but we do not believe this is how life or business works, the company wrote in its earnings release to explain the boosted spending. In other words, we can't keep growing our revenue unless we light our money on fire, so we're going to keep shoveling money into these capital projects. DoorDash not looking so good this morning. Stock down 13.5%, $206 for DoorDash. Couple of rough ones here. Snap is doing well. Everybody else reporting doing poorly this morning. All right, and a couple of quick ones I want to talk about here because we've got some developments in the trade war. First things first, China begins limited purchases of U.S. farm goods after Trump-Xi meeting. This one's just hitting the tape today. China did buy a couple of cargoes of soybeans last week, right? They had that big meeting in South Korea, some thawing in the trade war tensions. And then this morning, they're buying a little bit of wheat, but this paragraph here summarizes the article pretty good. This is more of China showing commitment to buy U.S. grains, as U.S. wheat is not the cheapest, said a Singapore-based grains trader with direct knowledge of the wheat deals. So it's more of a political move to buy these cargoes. This is a token purchase of wheat. It's an overture from the Chinese. It's not going to be a lot of release for U.S. farmers. They're just not buying that much. It was a few hundred thousand tons. Also going on this morning, this story is kind of weird. Nexperia cannot guarantee quality of chips made in China since October 13th. Now, guys, what I think the takeaway from this is when you hear Nexperia, you need to understand right now, it looks like there are two totally different companies operating under the name of Nexperia right now. And one Nexperia is saying we can't guarantee all Nexperias are going to be good stuff. Computer chip maker Nexperia expects to resolve a crisis over control of the company, it said on Thursday, but warned customers it cannot guarantee products made in China after October 13th are authentic and meet quality standards. The Dutch company statement said that facilities in other countries are operating as normal. The Dutch government seized control of Nexperia on September 30th, and the Chinese government blocked exports of its products from October 4th, leading to a shortage of Nexperia chips widely used by car makers. While most of Nexperia's chips are made in Europe, 70% are packaged and sold to distributors in China. The company's Chinese arm has asserted its independence from Dutch control and says it has sufficient stockpiles to supply customers through the end of 2025 and will look for alternative ways to source its chips. So you've got Nexperia in Europe that the Dutch government seized. They make the chips in Europe, but they package them and distribute them from China, where the other Nexperia, the one that the Dutch government couldn't seize, where they are. Now, that Nexperia doesn't make their own chips. The chips are made in Europe, but they're packaged and distributed from China. So you got two different companies here. And the Dutch Nexperia is saying, we don't know what's going on over in China here, so we're not going to put our stamp on whatever they're shipping, it's kind of weird. So, you know, supposedly there's been some thawing in the relations here, but this Nexperia saga is pretty weird. The takeaway is they're just two different companies now. And last but not least, we've got another shot fired in the trade war, if you will. This one from David Lee on Twitter. LME suspends trading in non-USD metal options starting on 11/10. And David Lee is linking to this press release from the London Metals Exchange. If you want to trade metal options on the LME, you better be using dollars. And they don't mention China or the yuan specifically here, but I would imagine that this is a shot fired at China and their market. They've been trying to push everybody to stop using dollars and use the yuan. LME saying, no, we're going to stop using the yuan. Now, I also want to point out this probably doesn't impact gold because LME doesn't sell gold and silver futures anymore. That's done at the LBMA, separate trading house. So I don't think this has to do with like the Shanghai Gold Exchange or anything like that. But this is another salvo in the trade war here. So we've got some peace overtures, this weird one from Nexperia, and then this LME thing. Trade war is not over. It's just at a funny point in its life right now. That's all. And I just want to say thank you very much to Ukbay Win. Yeah. What's going on, UBN? How you doing today? He's became a YouTube member. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. Welcome to the Melon Patch. And hey, by the way, thank you very much, Mr. Ukbay. Deborah Lanzo also became a new member. Thank you, Deb, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that, guys. Just remember, you get those super chats with your membership. You can use those. I'll read and respond to your questions or comments on the air. Thank you so much, Deb and Ukbay. I'm wondering if that's a pig Latin for something. I don't know. Chris Bott, thank you very much. He says, Nancy is retiring. My P&L will never be the same. Yeah, whose trades are we gonna mimic now without Pelosi? There was a Republican that was actually worse than Nancy Pelosi as far as like the number of stock trades and the money that they were making. Was it Thune? It was somebody. I mean, Pelosi gets all the attention because she's a high power Democrat, obviously, former speaker. But she wasn't the worst offender in Congress on the insider trading, not by a big margin, although she does do it. But that's interesting. Nancy's retiring. Okay, good. Enjoy your ice cream, Nancy. Bye-bye. Thanks again, Chris Bott. Wesley Rubel. What's going on, Wesley? He says government job non-farm estimates came out 850. We got non-farm? Did we really get that? Okay, hold on. Got to verify that. I'm going to check out Trading Economics here. Did we really get a non-farm payrolls today? Can anybody confirm that? I don't see it in any of the releases here. Okay, let me just see real quick, non-farm payrolls. I don't normally do this, guys, have this dead space here, try to like track it, but no, I got ADP data from yesterday. I don't see it. I'm not saying it didn't happen here, Chris, but that, or Wesley, I'm sorry. I'll keep a pin in that one. Came out about 850. I haven't seen it yet, whatever it is. But we'll keep an eye out for that. And, you know, we're supposed to get non-farm payrolls on Friday, but we're probably not because of the shutdown. We're supposed to have that tomorrow, which is why I'm making a big deal out of things like ADP and MacroEdge Job Cuts Tracker, because it's the only data we have. And not for nothing, those guys actually touch grass, boots on the ground, like actually talk to people instead of just government political influence making the numbers say whatever they want to say. So I'm actually inclined to put more stock into some of these private sector indicators than the government data. But thank you very much, Wesley, for that information. And thank you for being a Melonhead for 11 months. Hunt and Cover, good to see you, brother. He says, Miss Vito knows the score, Mr. Vinny. Yeah, it's a bullshit. What did she say? It's a bullshit question. You know, the Buick, the Pontiac Tempest wasn't available with an independent suspension. I don't know. I love that movie. The argument over the faucet is one of my favorite just diatribes, dialogues I've ever seen before. Pesci and, what's her name? Miss Vito, the beautiful Miss Vito. Son of a gun. I can't. Marissa Tomei, who won an Oscar for her performance in that one, by the way. And that is clearly a reference to my video that I put out yesterday, where I tapped into my inner Vincent Gambini in order to respond to CoreWeave CEO Michael Intrator and his long-winded speech about why AI isn't a bubble and why he rejects the premise of circular accounting. He said some things. I still don't know what the hell he said. I listened very hard. I don't know. You guys watch the video. Let me know. What was Michael Intrator saying? I don't know. Thank you very much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. I appreciate it. Thomas Owen, what's going on, sir? Owen, you a debt of gratitude for being a Melonhead member for 2 months. He says, is Burry's bet against NVIDIA the Big Short 2.0? It was a pretty big bet. The 13Fs are a little misleading because the 13Fs show the number of underlying shares represented by those calls or by those puts. It was either 10,000 or 50,000 puts that he took out on NVIDIA. We don't know what strike. We don't know how far out he went, what the expiration is. So that could be a massive bet or it could be a very small bet. You just don't get that much information from 13Fs. And by the time the 13F is released, the data is already old. For all we know, he took out the short on September 30th, filed the 13F, and then immediately covered it a day later. So for all we know, that trade isn't gone yet. Is it the Big Short 2.0? I think this story, the AI bubble, abso-freaking-lutely is the Big Short 2.0. And if they make a movie about it, I want to be portrayed by Alan Tudyk. The guy just gets me. He's hilarious. I freaking love Alan Tudyk. Alan, you're my hero. Thank you, Thomas Owen, for supporting the channel. Tom Dillon, what's going on, Tom? He says, heard yesterday, the average American no longer lives paycheck to paycheck. It's because he's dead, financially speaking. He now lives loan to loan, sadly true. Wow, I should have kept reading that before I made my joke because that's even better. And that's accurate. Buy now, pay later for groceries. Financing your DoorDash in 4 easy payments so you can eat lunch. Yeah, he lives loan to loan. Abso-freaking-lutely, that K-shaped economy. And look, the valuation of all these companies that has gone up and up and up without a solid middle-class consumer supporting buying the products and services that those companies produce, their earnings will not justify those valuations. And so that's the Jenga tower economy. All these people who are making all this money because the stocks are going up, what happens when the earnings of those stocks plummet because the people that are at the bottom can't afford to buy it anymore? Well, we're seeing some of that today. Very good point, Tom Dillon. Great quote. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Madison Hypes says, GPT bailout and Perplexity is the synthetic CDO moment. That is effing crazy. You know, when I saw, for me, the really like that is effing crazy moment was when I saw, number one, the government bailout. That was a big one. But when I found out that NVIDIA had signed that deal to automatically rent back any of their GPUs that CoreWeave bought that they can't find a market for. And in other words, NVIDIA was backstopping their sales to CoreWeave. That is a massive liability that I don't know if it lives anywhere on NVIDIA's balance sheet. But that was NVIDIA just buying their chips from themselves. And, you know, if the demand for this stuff is really so insane, if this market is so awesome, why do they have to do all this bullshit to keep their sales inflated? Because the demand isn't real, guys. I mean, I've been saying this for 2 years now, 2 damn years I've been screaming this, and everybody's like, this guy's a nut. Oh, he's missed out on the best opportunity in history. Yeah, I missed out on the opportunity to set my money on fire by investing it in Sam and Jensen's stupid story that doesn't make money, which is the point of these companies, is it not? Good God, what a mess. Thank you, Madison. Appreciate that very much. By the way, that synthetic CDO moment, the man in that scene in The Big Short with the synthetic CEO, the Asian guy, that was Wing Chow. Wing Chow was assembling CDOs for Magnetar Capital, custom CDOs. Magnetar Capital was picking the mortgage bonds to go in them, hand-picking them. And then Wing Chow would sell them to unsuspecting investors while Magnetar Capital bet against them. They were creating deliberately sabotaged investments and selling them to unsuspecting investors. And that is the primary financier of CoreWeave. I pointed that out 2 years ago, and the financial press said, don't listen to him. Said, don't listen to Twitter randos. Well, here we are. Thank you very much, Madison. Break My Wallet Motorsports says, see post where it don't belong. That'll get you going. Yep, that'll wake you up in the morning, unlike any cup of coffee I ever had. But again, I really think, what are Pelotons used for? I think they're used for, number one, jamming up the recycling with way too much cardboard. And number two, it is a very expensive towel rack because like most people who buy exercise bikes, they'll use it for a couple of weeks and then start hanging their clothes on it and go right back to their sedentary lifestyle, what they were doing before. What a joke of a company Peloton is, though. Thanks again. Break My Wallet Motorsports Metal Seer. Hey, he gifted one Nobody Special Finance membership. Who is that lucky melonhead? whoever you are, say thank you to Metal Seer. And I'll say thank you to Metal Seer as well. Welcome to the Melon Patch, and thank you, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. How do you say that? Josiah? Joshia? Jay? Hey, Josh. Mr. DeWitt, if you will. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. And you are most welcome, sir. I appreciate the generosity. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate all those super chats this morning and supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. You new guys, come on back tomorrow. We'll have our coffee together once again. Thanks again for the super chats. Thank you to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below. Should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Till next time, everybody. Live small and dream big.